Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Today's episode, I have Meredith Beard with me again. She is back to talk about less is more for long-term health. So let's jump into the podcast. So Meredith and I have been talking a ton about her Primal Health certification that she is working on. It is Mark Sisson's from the Daily, so Mark's Daily Apple. It is his certification program, and I think it's really cool. So I decided that we wanted to chat a little bit more and have you guys hear a little bit more about this. So the topic today is really less is more for long-term health, because I think a lot of people are getting caught up in so many ways with the do this, do that, don't do this, do that, do that. I mean, it's mind-boggling online, all the different directions you can go in. And if you've listened to any of my podcasts before, you hear me talking about simplifying life. And so in Mark Sisson's Primal Health certification, Yes. We have 10 basic rules to live by. And so, Meredith, I would love for you to kind of talk a little bit about these guys here and just maybe list them off, and we'll go through all 10, and then we'll make some points about each one. So, number one.
So, number one for optimal gene expression is avoid... No, that's number two. Number one is eat plants and animals.
Number two, which could be equally as important as number one, is avoiding poisons. So, by that, we had said that's foods that have chemicals in them.
Mm-hmm. Processed foods, sugars, things like that. So, because nowadays, I mean, there isn't a whole lot of poison out there. It's the processed foods that are poisoning us. So stay away from that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, back in the days when we were cavemen, it was don't eat the poisonous berries.
Yeah.
Right? Because they didn't have factories that made Frankenfood. But now we have to look at labels and read things versus look at the type of berry and identify, is it a good berry? Is it a bad berry? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, you know, an advanced level of evolution. So number three, what's number three here?
Move frequently. So a movement-rich day.
And this is something that we're going to talk about a little bit later, because in my office, I get a lot of patients who are trying to lose weight, and they'll be doing these amazing workouts. They'll even video them. They'll show me them. And it's like this killer workout for an hour. And then what do they do the rest of the day? They go and sit behind a computer. And this is like the biggest thing that chaps my hide with a lot of people, is I want people up and moving. I harass my assistant at work all the time. And I'm like, have you got up yet? What are you doing? Get up. And so we're going to talk about this in great depth.
And a cool example, too, is just even us right now. We're sitting on the floor. We're stretching out our hips. You know, we're not sitting in chairs. Like, this would be considered actually movement rich, is that we're working on our hips by sitting on the floor.
Yes. And those of you who know me, and if you ever talk to my assistant in my office, she doesn't understand how I don't sit all day. She's confused as to what the heck I'm doing there. But it's I don't like sitting. That's one. I hate my couch, to be honest. It hurts. And I think moving's great. So we're going to talk about that. Now, number four.
Lift heavy things.
Okay. So for a lot of people, lift heavy things translates into they must do Olympic lifting or CrossFit or like go bang out some bro set in the gym. Now, what does lift heavy things mean in terms of this Primal certification?
It means body weight. It means using your body. It means in our Primal days, we would have to build structures. We would have to carry the carcass back to camp that we had just hunted. We'd have to carry our berries back to camp. So basically lifting heavy things is functional full body movements that you do in short bursts and duration that is your entire body.
And I think that's a really good point to have this on there, because there's so many people that I will talk to in my practice and they'll be like, oh, I'm hurting so bad. I spent the whole weekend laying down some concrete in my backyard for a nice patio, and those heavy 50-pound bags of concrete just killed me. Okay, you just did that in one whole weekend. Of course that would hurt your body. But what if you like went and grabbed your 10-pound sack of potatoes? I don't know how many people actually buy 10-pound sacks of potatoes anymore. But, and of course you could argue, potatoes, are they healthy? Are they not? Whatever, who cares? It's 10 pounds of something heavy and you're moving it around on a regular basis. Because I think a lot of people try to avoid lifting things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big mistake. I think a lot of us should just like goof off running around the house with some weights above our heads. Okay, number five. What's number five?
Sprint once in a while.
Hmm.
Yeah, so not that you need to do really hard cardio sessions every single day. The idea with moving more, if you're moving more all day long, and the idea is to keep your heart rate within a lower heart rate range. So basically for women, you take 160 minus your age, and that would be your target heart rate. For men, and this is just a rough approximation, it's not like exact, but for men, you'd take 180 and minus your age, and that would be your heart rate that you'd want to try to achieve for that movement throughout the day. About twice a week, you do want to have an all-out sprint. Whether that's, you know, if you have the capacity to run, it would be running, you know, for 10 to 30 seconds max, because pretty much for most of us, after about 20 seconds, you start losing form. But you could have that all-out sprint be on a cardio equipment. It could be on a bike. It could be, there's a lot of different ways to represent or to do the all-out sprint. But yeah, you want to do that once in a while, and you only need to do it about 4 to 6 six sets. You don't have to have this like crazy 1 hour intense crazy cardio session.
Yeah, I think that's something to think about in terms of less is more, because I think a lot of us, you know, even a lot of us who are in our late 30s, early 40s, into the 50s, we kind of grew up in a time frame where cardio was king, right? And we were supposed to beat ourselves up for hours at a time, and that's how you lost weight, or that's how you got into shape. And really, I think we're starting to realize that we screwed up on this. And sprinting. Now, we experimented, Meredith and I, last week, were doing some sprinting just to see what would happen and how we felt. And holy cow, both of us had some hip flexors, so front of our hips were kind of tight. And Meredith's been talking about her knee being a little tight. And I kind of felt that my glute was spasming a little bit. And so these are things that people would stop doing these exercises and go, oh my gosh, I'm going to hurt myself. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about how less is more in terms of mobility in this case. But I think sprinting, to keep that as a regular routine to help you weigh it. Well, you know, what if someone is chasing you? You need to be able to sprint. But also to help with those short bursts of energy. I think these are huge. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later when we talk about exercise. All right. So number six, what's number six?
You need proper recovery and sleep and rest.
That one goes without saying, of course. But with sleep, I mean, is he talking 6-8 hours? What's he saying in this primal certificate?
For recovery, it'd be a little bit different for everybody, but about 7 to 8 hours.
Okay.
So the idea would be with this primal certification is that you start to learn your circadian rhythms, and that you actually have to do things to help with that. Like, I mean, take personal responsibility over behaviors that take you away from good recovery. For example, in the evening, our body naturally wants to produce melatonin once it's dark out. But in today's day and age, we have artificial lights. We have our computer screens. We have a whole bunch of entertainment that inhibits that production of the melatonin, because we choose to participate in those activities because they are fun. They're enjoyable. I mean, I enjoy watching Netflix at night, you know, with my wife, you know, but it does take away from me being able to fall asleep quickly because I haven't allowed my body to do its natural instinct to produce, you know, this chemical to help me with rest, because I've made the decision to keep my lights on and look at my phone and do all those types of things. So the idea is that you would naturally help yourself with your recovery, and you'd get the natural right amount of sleep if you, you know, when it's dark out, turn the lights off, go to bed. When it's light out, get up, you know.
No, these are huge things, and I think a lot of us have gotten really far away from this. And part of going back to our genetics, since everyone's now into genetics, part of our genetics is our genes, that we are still pretty close to being cavemen. We haven't evolved. And by not evolving, we're further inhibiting our evolution. And if we go back to the basics on genetics, which Meredith and I were talking a lot about earlier, is that animals, which we are, do change genetics from generation to generation in some cases. And sometimes it takes a couple of years, or not years, but a couple of centuries for genes to actually change. But we're inhibiting this because we are not, we're not given any pressure for survival anymore. And so bad genes just keep getting passed on. And one of the things with sleep, and something that I come back to a lot of times with patients, is a lot of people try to tell me, oh, I don't need that much sleep. Or I've been told that from other people that they just can't sleep. They can't go to bed at night. They're night owls, things of that nature. Well, And then there's other people who will skip sleep just to get up early and go do their workout no matter what. And all of these things are detrimental, and we need to really start paying attention to our sleep hygiene and kind of working with the change in light, you know, the darker and lighter time frames. So things to think about. Now, number seven.
Number seven is play.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah, you talk about play a lot.
I like to play. And I think for a lot of us, we don't play. This last weekend, I went out to our friend's farm, and I was chasing my dogs around on my hands and knees. And I was also doing bear crawl types of movements, and I was doing some handstands. I can't do handstand walks, but I was doing cartwheels chasing the dogs. I think a lot of us stop doing this, and play is our way to keep ourselves mobile. I mean, you look at a 4 or 5 year old before they go to kindergarten, which is the death, of course, of their hip flexors.
Yeah, sit in the chair. Makes me think of, I'm going to interrupt you, like hanging out with my niece just over the weekend, and she's 4, and watching her just so easily take her foot, and she stuck it in her mouth. And then I was like, hey, can you touch your nose with your foot? And everybody's like, of course you can. But just watching how mobile her hips are based off of, because she's 4, she's never in a chair. She's playing, she's crawling, she's jumping, she's, you know, but she's hardly ever sitting. The only time she's sitting is when she's forced to sit down to eat, you know, and but I just saw that as a huge encourager of that whole play idea and that whole movement rich idea of, if you're, you know, moving around and you're playing, that a lot of mobility issues wouldn't be a problem. And back to less is more, you know. But yeah, just watching her play, I was like, oh my God, I need to play more.
We all do. We absolutely do. Less adulting, more play. If you take nothing else away from this podcast, I want you to adult less and play more.
Yeah. Well, and another piece that, with play, from how I understand it too, and what they talk about, or Mark Sisson's certification talks about, is when we're in a state of play, that's where it's less stress. So if you're under less stress, you're more able to learn. And when you're more able to learn, you're making more connections to your body and your movement as you're playing, rather than a like prescribed stressful movement within a workout because you have this expectation to reach this goal. When you're in a state of play and enjoyment, you tend to use your body in a more free form type of way, and you can get more benefit from your movement based off of just not having that stress involved with the activity.
Yeah, plus just fun. Because I think a lot of us go into our workouts thinking that we have to bang out a certain amount of miles if we're trying to train for some marathon, or we have to bang out a certain amount of weights because that's what's been told of us for that particular day, and we don't want to look goofy in front of our friends. And really, think about it. I really want you guys to think about it right now. When's the last time you went into a workout and it was really fun for you? I bet a lot of people don't even think of a workout being as fun. That's something to really, really hone in on, because, and here's why, because a lot of people come to my office day in, day out complaining about not losing weight, and they're working their butts off and they're working hard in the gym and they're eating right. Yeah, but are you enjoying yourself? That's the number one question I ask people. Are you enjoying yourself? And they look at me and like, I'm freaking nuts. But the truth of the matter is if you're not enjoying yourself when you're in the gym or when you're doing your workouts or when you're running or whatever it is, and it's a grind, your cortisol's up and you're not going to get anywhere with your weight loss. So take that to heart. That is very, very important. All right, number eight.
Number eight is sunlight. It's important to get at least a half hour of sunlight a day on your large body parts. And the reason why I'm saying that, I don't know. The reason why I'm saying that is because there's a lot of education out there regarding, you know, like skin cancer. And yes, you want to cover your face, you want to cover your hands, you want to cover your ears and neck. But for about a half hour a day, if you can, you want to get proper sunlight to get that vitamin D. Vitamin D is super important for just creating our optimal health. You can go into the science for vitamin D.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the things, if we talk about genes a little bit, because I know that Mark Sisson's program is all about talking about how you can change your genes and you can, you know, get things to adapt better, et cetera, et cetera. Well, a lot of people tell me now, well, I've had my genetics tested and I don't absorb vitamin D from the sun. What do I do? Well, you can still get out there. You have receptors all over your body that not only is a vitamin D, your body responds to sunlight and so many other levels than just vitamin D. Mm-hmm. Now, you might need to supplement with vitamin D, and that's totally fine. But, I mean, just to have the sunlight hit your skin,
that also helps with boosting the immune system, even beyond, and your mood, even beyond the vitamin D component of things. And I'm not going to get into a debate about vitamin D and how much, you know, you need to take right now, other than I do say that most people need at least 2,000 IU as a baseline, and go beyond that in terms of testing and determine what levels you need. But sunlight's important, and it goes back to our sleep too. The amount of sunlight you get during the day, it's going to help you to sleep later on, because your body's setting in with its circadian rhythms in terms of understanding daylight and nighttime, because our bodies are really confused. If you've ever been to Las Vegas and you've tried to like go to the casinos a couple days in a row, and like you're in one, like New York always mess with me because it would seem like it's daytime, but it's 3 a.m. and you have no idea. It like messes with you. And that's like a prime example of what you're doing to yourself if you're not getting out and getting the benefits of the sun. But also if you're not taking the screen time out and really trying to live by sunset and sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number 9.
Avoid stupid mistakes.
I like this one.
Yeah.
I had to quantify this for Meredith to find out, like, what are stupid mistakes according to the Primal Certificate Program?
So, well, back in the day, being primal, like, a stupid mistake would be not being mindful of the step you're taking and falling and getting an abrasion. Abrasion could be the difference between life and death. Making stupid mistakes would be not being mindful of your footing and things of that nature. But nowadays, making stupid mistakes would be texting and driving. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be you not using your mindfulness. That'd be not being present in your moment. And that would not require your optimal genetic response to your situation.
Absolutely.
Stupid mistakes would be you're having trouble lighting your fire. Oh, I know. I'll pour gasoline on it. Stupid mistakes would be as you're driving. I mean, I like to talk about driving a lot, but all the different warnings that are on the road, like these big yellow signs that say, hey, there's a curve coming, but you're not paying attention even to that like warning. And, you know, you still take that corner going too fast, or stupid mistake. I mean, there's so many stupid mistakes.
You can go on.
I mean, go on YouTube and like just, yeah, like watch the Jackass shows. Like those are stupid mistakes. I mean, they're funny, but like that would be an example of stupid mistakes.
No, and I think with stupid mistakes, obviously in our caveman days, those would kill us, like you had mentioned. Now we have cars, we have scooters, we have all kinds of different things that we aren't paying attention. We're not being mindful when we're in these particular situations. And I think for a lot of people, that kind of leads us into number 10 in terms of...
Use your brain. Number 10, use the brain. It's important.
Yeah, that I can't say that, stress that enough, because I think, and I'm not saying that people are stupid. I think everyone has their own level of intelligence and brings something important to the table. But I think for us, we don't challenge ourselves enough mentally. If something's too hard, we just go right to Google to solve it, or YouTube, or something of that nature, versus trying to work out the problem. Part of, for me, what I love about my job with acupuncture and pain is it's a puzzle. And figuring, you know, using my brain to figure the puzzle out. And I think for a lot of people these days, if we really look at using the brain, how often at work are you really challenged? You know, some people have challenging jobs. Other people don't, in terms mentally. And so thinking about how you can challenge your brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also in terms of just like mental health, because a lot of this stuff is to balance out an overall like plan for living. And I know for me, from my own life experience, when I'm in a state of learning, I am in such a great mood because I'm growing. I'm striving towards something. I'm improving myself. And when I'm teaching myself something that I enjoy, I am in such a great space. So whatever that could be for anybody, whatever it is, and even outside of maybe your realm of what you enjoy, but just teaching yourself something new is super important for keeping your mind fresh, for creating new connections, for continuing the growth of your mind and not allowing it to regress through performing the same thing day in and day out. You know, it's important to be new and create, you know, and so absolutely, it takes you out of surviving your day into creating your day.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Taking out of surviving the day and creating the day. I think that for a lot of people is huge, because there's so many people that are in mundane jobs that bore the daylights out of them, and
maybe with their situation where they are financially, et cetera, they can't get out of that. But what they can do is learn something new, learn a new task so that they feel like they're still growing. I actually had a teenager in my office last week who her mom had her come in to see me because the mom said she's depressed. Well, I worked through everything with this teenager to kind of ask all the typical questions of depression. And honestly, it's not just she's depressed. She's bored. She's bored in high school. And I get it. You know, I came from that background of being bored in high school. And what happens when you're bored in high school? You either get in trouble or you become depressed. And that's how humans are. We become really depressed when we're bored and not challenging our brain. And I'm not talking like you have to go buy a Rubik's Cube. I mean, I'm talking about, like Meredith said, learning, like learning a new language. Meredith's been working on Spanish, which is super cool. And that's like a huge challenge for the brain to come up with a new pattern. Now, the other thing we talked about learning was the exercise component. And this is going to segue us perfectly into our lessons more for long-term health in terms of exercise, is that you can teach your brain new movements or relearn old movements, because a lot of us used to jump and jump to stairs and things of that nature and jump up and down stairs, you know, as kids playing around. And this is something that I had to use my brain quite a bit in my workouts with Meredith last week when we were working on the stairs, because she had us jumping up and down. And so you can take this learning to all kinds of different levels. And so let's segue into this exercise in terms of excess of anything in exercise, because I think with society, just as much as we've supersized at McDonald's, we're supersizing all of our workouts thinking that we are going to be getting so much more for this supersized workout. Meredith, let's talk about this a little bit. Tell me about the chronic exerciser component.
Yeah. So for me and from my own life experience, but then combining it with all the new information that I'm learning regarding, you know, like less is more, if you are, you know, using all of those 10 laws that we were talking about, or 10 rules, if you have those in compliance, doing a little bit of less of everything, you actually end up helping your long-term performance. And regarding the cardio, a lot of people, and I know I've been victim to this with a lifestyle of where I am sitting all day at a job, or if I'm standing all day in the same position at a job, or, you know, once I get home, I'm conditioned to, oh, now I'm sitting on my couch. That 1 hour of organized exercise felt really important for, you know, meeting all my needs as an athlete and getting a lot of those primal needs met. However, every few months I would have some sort of chronic injury, you know, like related to my shoulder or to my knee, or related to a movement pattern, because I kept using the same movement patterns that were not using all of my body. We're just using like my larger muscle groups. And every couple months I would have to quit working out as hard because of that chronic exercise piece. Now I'm starting to learn that if I have a movement rich day that and then I'm being mindful about all my movements, I am incorporating play, I'm incorporating, you know, proper rest, I'm incorporating proper nutrition, which is huge. I actually only need to lift heavy weights a couple of times a week. I do my sprint exercise a couple of times a week. However, I don't want it to get it twisted. I am exercising every single day, and I turn everything I'm doing into an exercise, even when I'm like standing and washing the dishes, because I'm incorporating all of these components of how to have, you know, a rich movement environment. Like I think about, what are my feet doing as I'm standing? What's my posture? Am I shrugging? Are my shoulders down and back? Where's the position of my chin? You know, so even washing the dishes can turn into a little bit of a workout. Every time I bend over to pick something up, I'm mindful of, am I squatting? Are my feet flat on the ground? What are my hips doing? Are my shoulders down and back? Am I engaging my core? You know, I found a way to turn everything I'm doing into a mini exercise. I also, back to this, which I don't want this to get twisted at all either, I am exercising about a half hour a day, maybe 45 minutes, where I keep my heart rate in that range that I talked about earlier. You know, my heart rate only needs to be about 125, you know, for a duration of a half hour for me to reap the benefits from the nutrition that I'm incorporating into my life. You know, I'm eating all real foods. I've cut out, you know, processed carbs, processed sugars. And also, if I relate it back to the primal way, you know, our genetics are still the same. If we, back in the day, if we had these like crazy workouts that we couldn't recover from, that meant life or death. You know, what we, for optimal gene expression, we would be moving all day long, and you couldn't move beyond the capacity of the nutrition we had, right? So, I mean, I get that in today's day and age, we have a lot more abilities to, you know, have nutrition to help support extra exercise or, you know, excessive exercise. But for me personally, for long-term health and wanting to move without injury and to move well and to continue my, to continue to grow as a human, I'm finding for me, continued less is more, slow is fast.
Absolutely. No, I absolutely agree with that. And I think one of the big things that I'd like folks to take away from this podcast is something that I hear commonly in my office is, I just started this new workout program. I'm hitting the gym or working out at home every single day consistently. I'm sweating. I'm getting my heart rate up. You know, I don't understand why I'm losing weight. Like, doc, what's wrong? Why can't I lose weight? You know, and one of the big things I think that you highlighted upon with this is that, one, folks aren't moving all day long. They're going to bang out their workout, then they're going to go sit in front of a desk or whatever it may be. That's one problem. But if you're not that person and you actually have a mobile job and you're moving around, then the next thing comes to, okay, is that really high intensity workout too much for your body? In terms of your genetics, is it that it's stressing you too much? And then now you're like, literally the valves are open to make cortisol. And what happens when you make too much cortisol? You're going to store everything as fat. And so Unfortunately, I think we have a lot of people that don't realize that how stressed they are in everyday life, then doing these stressful workouts on top of it, they're working against their body's genetics to be able to have success with weight loss. And I'll be perfectly honest that this has been something that I've struggled with for a long time because I love that endorphin hit from that really hard workout. But now I'm starting to get the endorphin hits from playing. Mm-hmm. And so changing that mindset around this is a huge thing that, of course, Meredith and I both want folks to start to understand that less is more when it comes to workouts. And that's why we're bringing this up. Now, another big thing that Meredith brought up that I wanted to quick touch on is the types of lifting workouts. Because I talk a lot about lifting in here in my podcast, and I know that a lot of people think that that's all I do. That is not all I do. And the bro set kind of workouts were back and buys and, you know, it's not even back and buys, isn't it? Back and tries. Anyway, whatever. See, I don't even know anymore because it's been so long. It's chest and buys, back and tries. And yeah, there you go.
You basically flip the front and the back.
Yeah. Bro sets. For those of you that have ever heard of that. But, like, that's just straight lifting, right? And a lot of people do just straight lifting and then bang out, like, a 45-minute cardio set either on top of that or in between their 3 days of lifting. And honestly, some of these really heavy bro set lifts where you're, you know, with your buddies and trying to see who can, you know, bench press the most, and then you're banging out the 100-pound dumbbells with your bicep curls, and maybe I'm exaggerating because there's no way I ever picked out 100-pound dumbbells, but some guys do. But, you know, if you're a lady and this is your thing where you've been doing some of the workouts like that and you're taking your 20, 25, 30, 35-pound dumbbells and you're just banging out as much weight as you can and getting as much chest press as you can, this is raising your cortisol level too. And if you're wondering why that on top of your cardio is not getting you the results that you need, it's probably because your stressful lifestyle, your body's stuck in that cortisol-making mode. It's inhibiting you from getting where you need to be. Plus, also watching the heart rate. Because that's another biggie. One thing that happened with me, and I'll fully admit, with CrossFit, is I was never getting my heart rate up high enough with the lifting. Now, when I did the 7 minutes or 10 minutes of our WOD, my heart rate would go up, but it would shoot up so high, way beyond. I mean, my resting heart rate's like 44. And my heart rate would go up to like 160, 180, like redlining with a lot of these 7 to 10 minute watts. That's not good for your cortisol production in your body. And so if you're one of the people like me where you've got a really low resting heart rate, you shoot it up really high for these quick watts and you're not getting your heart rate up during the actual lifting, that's another issue. So something to think about. I'm getting way detailed more than we wanted to be on this. But for exercise, less is more. Start playing a little bit. Do briefer sets of strength building because I think strength's important. I think that play and cardio also are important. It's just finding the right balance of them. And like Meredith was saying, taking – so what's the math on that again? It's taking – the for ladies,
so 160 minus your age.
Okay,
and again, this is just approximate, but 160 minus your age, and that's the heart rate that you want to be in for a 20 to 30 minute cardio session.
Okay,
which incorporates primal movements, would you know, which push, pull, lift, crawl.
Yeah,
you know, crawling is so important for you.
All of those different things: hinge, squat.
Yeah, yeah, squatting. And then for me. My goals are for total body wellness, you know, mind, body, spirit, and for optimal cognitive function, and also for me to have sustained movement. So that's where I'm coming from, and that's my background. And I've done lots of different types and styles of exercise. You know, in my early 20s, I didn't know any better, and I did, you know, the bro sets. And, you know, and then it turned into, like, you know, I did P90X, and I've done CrossFit, and, you know, and I've loved all of it, and all of it for the season that I was at in my life at that time served a purpose that has taught me some great, you know, benefits and also has helped shape me to the type of athlete I want to be now as I am, you know, starting my 40s and aging into the rest of my life. And where I want to be now is I want to be able to move for the rest of my life. But more than just move, I want to continue to get healthier and healthier and healthier for the long term, not for the short term. And back to, I'm not knocking any sports. I'm not knocking any specialization. You know, those serve purpose for wherever you're at in the season that you're at. But for me, I just want to have my optimal, like, performance. And for me, I'm finding a great vernacular through Mark Sisson's Primal Health Certification to help promote that less is more if you're staying within compliance of these 10 laws. And it is working out great for me.
And I think that's where you want to be thinking as you get older. You know, injuries can take you out pretty terribly as you get older. I see it every day in my practice, of course, because I work with pain management quite a bit. But also just thinking about longevity and health, because I think the biggest thing that folks in their 30s and older need to be thinking about is what can they do to keep themselves healthy for life. Not saying that you couldn't do it in your 20s. It's only that it's really hard to convince someone in that age range that they need to be thinking about life, long-term health. So there you have it. Now, we've been talking a lot about exercise. I want to get into actually thinking about what you're doing more mentally in terms of how to better connect your mind and your body and how we're moving better and how that can also help with mental health in the long term. Because I think a lot of people, as we get older, like I said before, are you having fun with your workouts or is it a grind? Are you making yourself do it just because you think you need to do it? And so the idea here is with exercise, Meredith, tell me a little bit about how you've used exercise to help with your mental health.
Well, for me, kind of like how you tied in to use some of the language you use, like the puzzle, right? So my body is its own unique puzzle, and I have my own unique movement pattern and recruitment pattern of how I – you know, move from point A to point B. And back to tying this into, you know, things that to have my optimal gene expression is play and using my brain, right? So for me, trying to figure out how to fix different movement patterns within my own body is a great way to use my brain. And I also have to play to fix that. And I also have to get myself into a place of non-judgment, and I have to get myself into a place of, I don't know, I was conditioned to be pretty judgmental of myself. And so for me to get to this place of moving in a way to help me feel more healthful has incredibly helped my mental health. Because for me, I understand my movement to be wrapped up in my sensory, and I comprehend that my sensory is wrapped up in my emotions, and I comprehend that my emotions are wrapped up in thought, right? So for me, what I love about movement and how it helps me with my mental health is For me, on a sensory level, I understand the way that I move is based off of a way that I think. And if I want to fix the way that I think, I need to fix the way that I move. And if I fix the way that I move, I'm fixing the way that I'm thinking. So with that all put together, for me in my way, I found a practice that has helped me so much with my mental health.
I think that's huge. And that's something that I want to really get out to a lot of folks out there is I think a lot of us get grumpy because our jobs maybe don't challenge us. Maybe our workouts don't challenge us mentally. And so thinking outside the box, getting your using your brain a little bit more to help with your emotions, to help with where you are in life and regaining the fun and the enjoyment back in life. Mm-hmm. Now, Meredith has done something really cool with her pinky toe. And I want her to tell you guys about it because a lot of people come in my practice and we do a movement assessment and I tell them, okay, this doesn't move really great, that doesn't move really great, and these are the types of exercises and play that I want you to do to help with your movement. And a lot of people are like, how long is this going to take me? And I'm like, it could take you years. It really freaking could take you years. And a lot of people look at me and go, well, I'm not going to do that. Well, why not? Wouldn't you want to move better into, you know, your 90s and 100s? Why wouldn't you put the effort in? So I want Meredith to tell her story about her pinky toe because this is something that's super inspiring. And while maybe you don't have a pinky toe that is like Meredith's, maybe it's your shoulder, maybe it is your, you know, neck going forward, or maybe it's your poor posture, whatever it may be, these things can be changed. It just takes some diligence. So tell us about your pinky toe.
Okay, so my little toe doesn't, or at least it used to not, to touch the ground. It never touched the ground. My little toe piggybacks on my other toe. The interesting story behind that, and if you want to tie it into, like, genetics, my family, so many people in my family, their little toe doesn't touch the ground. And I don't really know what the reason for that is. But I can tell you with hindsight, consciously as a little kid, because I really wanted to connect with my dad, I didn't want my little toe to touch the ground. I even have memory of, you know, like helping it not touch the ground, right? And this is me very little, baby, bite size. And even to incorporate it into like mental health, you know, my family, you know, they divorced when I was young and things like that. So there was a component when I was young to, you know, you really want to still fit in within your tribe, right? So me not having my little toe touch the ground was, you know, pretty important for me to fit in a situation that was not very stable at the time during early development. And so, but without knowing this, I know this now, but not using my little toe turned off such a sequence and series of muscles required for locomotion in my calf, directly related to my hips, my glutes, right? My entire life, I've waddled when I walk. It makes sense now why I waddled, because I wasn't using my butt. And I'm not saying the whole reason is because of my little toe, but that definitely was a key player, right? And I also, as an adult, have developed a shoulder injury. And that shoulder injury, I've had various different assessments done and MRIs, and medical professionals have helped me. This is all going to come full circle. Don't worry. My shoulder injury actually is related to posture. So posture just isn't, you know, shoulders up. It's not waist up. It's the ground up, right? So I could say that some of my shoulder injury potentially could have been because of the movement pattern that I created based off of turning off muscles not to use my little toe. So the motivational piece for me in my own pocket that I like to draw upon regarding my little toe is I really wanted to fix my shoulder. I really want optimal health. I really want optimal movement. I want to feel the best in my body, because if I'm not feeling well, then my mind likes to incorporate that body stress as mind stress. And then my mind will look for any pattern that relates to stress and how stress makes sense to me, back to mental health and how it's all interwoven for me. So I want my mind to work right. I want my body to work right. So I decided I'm going to fix my feet. So I've been finding lots of research on foot health. I found the Foot Collective on Instagram. I highly recommend following them. But I learned about getting toe separators. I learned about different foot exercises. I learned that it's really important to have human footwear, to have a wide toe box. I've learned that arch support is super important. I learned how arch support is related to, you know, using my calves and using my glutes. And but basically, I've been working on this for about 9 months now. When I first started, I have felt different. I have felt better. I have slowly improved my movement pattern. I've slowly improved how I'm walking, but I still have a long ways to go. And I even had like a mental breakdown this morning because my knee was hurting and my patella tendon. And I knew, I was like, gosh, dang it. Like, I've been working so hard on my feet and my glutes. Why is my knee hurting? And it's because, you know, I'm not turning on the right muscles. And I was getting frustrated. But I'm so glad I haven't quit this journey because when I've taken pictures of my feet from 0 months to 6 months, on a sensory level, I feel exponentially better. But when I looked at my images of my feet, hardly any difference from 0 to 6 months. I took another picture at 9 months. 9 months, my foot looks completely different. I actually have mass on my foot. It looks like I have foot gains, you know, like that I put on like muscle mass. And my little toe now actually touches the ground. I don't have to actually consciously think about it. And I mean, of course, when I do certain movements, my little toe, because it's an ingrained pattern. I mean, I'm 37 from, you know, baby to 37. I've walked a certain way, right? So like my little toe still does shoot up to the ceiling. It still does want to piggyback on my other foot. But when I do squats, if I position my feet in the correct way, my little toe actually goes down. But it's because I've put in the daily practice. And honestly, less is more. It wasn't like I'm like, oh, I'm going to do 500 foot crunches, you know, but I'm a little bit every single day. I made sure I walked for 15 minutes every single day outside barefoot. Now I can do it much longer, but I made sure I did these simple practices every single day. And now my foot is a completely different foot. I've changed how I'm moving locomotively, which is huge considering I have an ingrained movement pattern from early development. There's so many videos of me on family vacations because I love my dad, bless his heart. Whenever we go on vacations, he'd say, walk by, and we'd all walk by him while he was filming us. All those videos, I'm waddling. And even to this day, sometimes people say, are you limping? And I finally figured out why it looks like I'm limping. It's because I actually don't do dorsal flexion, and I turn off my glutes, and I allow my foot to whip around, and you can, it looks like I'm limping, but I'm not, you know, it's just a movement pattern that I've created from childhood. But my point is, and back to the victory for me and the motivation for me, is that it's taken 9 months, and I'm really excited I have that in my pocket, because even when I'm frustrated, I'm like, I'm so glad I didn't quit after 6 months.
Yeah.
You know? That's that was a really huge. Long story, but I feel like it was necessary.
It was absolutely necessary. And I think that's the point here for everyone to take away, because I've been blown away with how Meredith's foot has changed so much in the 9 months. But I think for a lot of people, 9 months is a long time. Yes, it is. But the key component here in terms of, she didn't do 500 toe crunches to get that foot down. She moved every single day, kept it in mind that it was going to be a daily habit to work on her movement. And by not killing yourself every single day, but taking the little steps to move, taking the little steps to help with your mobility, taking the steps to realize how well you move, how, you know, if anything's off in your motion. And by the way, my next podcast is going to be all about the 9 movements that you need to assess to see if you're moving properly and then what to do to correct them and who to find if you don't have someone in your area to help you with that. But that point being, that less is truly more. And as you're getting older, things to think about in terms of long-term health, what are you going to be doing on a daily basis to keep you healthy? So, Meredith, thanks for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Janine.
And everybody out there, you guys have survived another episode of The Health Fix. Stay tuned for my next podcast where I'm going to talk about all those emotions that can help you to carry out the less is more for long-term health. All right. Have a great day, whatever you're doing.